Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we are once again called to counteract the vile and deceptive and often outright lying propaganda that we get on a daily basis from the U.S. corporate media.
And this one is unrelenting. It's been over 2 weeks.
Yes, it is, and yes, it has. And, of course, we're talking about what has probably been topic A for the last couple of weeks, more or less, in the corporate news media, and that being the death of Alexei Navalny at a remote Arctic penal colony, which, of course, the Western media immediately jumped and blamed the death on Vladimir Putin.
Because Western values, you know, like innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
Yeah, they're upholding Western values. That's why they're killing people all the world, for Western values.
Yeah.
But if it's a good propaganda score, forget Western values.
Yep. This is yet another case in which you're not getting the whole story. In fact, you're not getting the real story at all. For example, it is irrefutable that Alexei Navalny has been a recipient of funds from the West, from the National Endowment for Democracy, which basically is a State Department-funded operation geared to interfering in the governments of other nations, whether it's their elections or just trying to overthrow their governments through so-called regime change. That's basically what they're about, and that's what Alexei Navalny was about.
That was their big reform in the 80s.
Yeah.
In the 70s, Americans were outraged by the church, the Senator
Frank Church
right. hearings, and then in the House, of course, Leo Ryan passed a bill, the Ryan something else bill, saying that the CIA could no longer overthrow governments. Then Leo Ryan got murdered in Guyana and Jonestown, but
right.
that was just a coincidence.
Yeah, it was just
a coincidence. And the reform under the evil Reagan was, all right, the CIA is no longer going to overthrow governments. Instead, we're going to set up this NGO, the National Endowment for Democracy, which will be totally U.S. funded, just like the CIA. Well, the CIA has other sources of funding now, don't they?
Yeah.
But anyhow, they're the ones that overthrow governments now. See?
Yeah.
See? Who says you can't reform things in America?
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of public, it goes private. Oh,
yeah.
That's really an improvement. I just want to say something else interesting. Yesterday, the head of the Ukrainian secret intelligence agency
right.
said that he died of a blood clot.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because that's not going along with the propaganda.
Yeah.
Why? Why after 2 weeks is he coming out and saying, oh no, you know, all that stuff about Putin and blah, blah, blah. He died of a blood clot.
Well, that is the official believed cause of death at this time, although Russian officials are still investigating the death.
Oh, he hasn't had an autopsy yet?
I don't know. That hasn't been reported yet. But in any event, we wanted to give you a little different perspective here from Covert Action Magazine, which you can find at covertactionmagazine.com. Covert Action, of course, was originally a paper publication founded by ex-CIA agent Philip Agee, who exposed many of the crimes of the CIA back during that same time period in the 70s and into the 80s.
So they passed a law that exposing a CIA agent is like you get the death penalty. That was their reform for that. For transparency and openness, they said it was against the law. Unless you're Dick Cheney, of course.
Right.
If you're Dick Cheney, you can go ahead and out a CIA agent.
Yeah.
If you're Dick Cheney, you can shoot someone in the face. You can do anything you want.
In any event, this is a storied publication. It's been around a while and has done great work over the years in exposing the crimes of Western intelligence agencies. And this article by lead editor Jeremy Kuzmarov is entitled Death of Navalny Being Exploited to Try and Sustain U.S. Military Aid to Ukraine.
Well, that's the thing. It's just so convenient. Not for Russia, of course. It absolutely was inconvenient for Russia. But let's just look at what happened. Tucker Carlson did an interview with Putin, and it got 1 billion views
right,
worldwide.
Right.
The Congress was holding up the $61 billion to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Avdiivka was liberated by Russian forces, and that was a biggie because Ukraine was really trying to hang on to that, and it looked bad for them to lose. And the Munich Security Council, where all the war profiteers from the West get together and eat caviar and drink champagne. It was about to commence, and they wanted to get Europe to pledge more money to the Kiev regime.
Yeah.
And boom, guess who dies?
Yeah.
How convenient, the very first day. And guess who's there in Munich? His widow, his recently bereaved widow, who got up and pledged to take that NED money and carry on with her ex-husband's crusade.
Yeah, yeah.
So she gave a speech where she fought back tears and, oh boy, it was so important. But, you know, there's millions at stake here and now I get it all, is what she didn't say. But come on now.
Yeah, and as we'll see in this article, we have to ask the question, cui bono?
Exactly.
The Latin expression basically asking who benefits. And yeah, as you just pointed out, it was the West that benefited from this.
Big
certainly
time.
Not Vladimir Putin and Russia.
The very same week, Julian Assange was having his trial, kangaroo court trial. Now, this is an actual American targeted person being held by Mini-Me UK in their dungeon in London. Not a word. And let us not forget Gonzalo Lira, an American citizen who died in a Ukrainian prison in January for the crime of free speech, the crime of criticizing the Zelensky regime.
And doing journalism.
Not a word. But this guy, we're told, he's the biggest opposition leader. He polls at 1%. There's a whole bunch of Russians that never even heard of him. Oh, yeah. When he dies, we've been hearing about it for 2 weeks. And I don't think there's any end to it anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because soon we're going to hear about her.
Right.
Except for, did you hear? Her name is Yulia Navalny. But Biden met with her. This is how, you can tell they're CIA assets. You don't meet the United States president when your husband dies unless he's an asset, right?
Right.
He called her Yolanda. We are going to back Yolanda to the max.
Well, par for the course there. The article begins, the death of Alexei Navalny at a remote Arctic penal colony is being used to try to sustain U.S. military aid to Ukraine at a time of growing congressional opposition and after the Russians have taken control of Avdiivka, a key battleground in eastern Ukraine. The bias of the U.S. media was evident in the New York Times Sunday opinion section on February 18th, which featured the following headlines on one page. Florida's fraudster and Russia's killer, the best case for U.S. aid to Ukraine, and what we can learn from Navalny. The Florida fraudster piece by Maureen Dowd replicated an earlier accusation made by Dowd right out of the John Birch Society playbook that Donald Trump was a Russian agent. In a 2018 column, Dowd had inanely suggested that Trump gravitated to Vladimir Putin because Putin reminded Trump of his authoritarian father. In her latest piece, Dowd mocks Trump for having had a bromance with the sociopathic Putin, those are her words, unimpeded by Putin's foul bid to swallow Ukraine. Dowd said that this bromance had, quote, grown ever more sickening with news that the Russian president's most potent opponent, Alexei Navalny, 47, that's a lie right there.
That's such a lie.
Died mysteriously in an Arctic prison, very, very suddenly, as high-profile Putin critics often do, unquote. Make no mistake, Putin is responsible, President Biden said.
Here's the thing. Putin's number one opponent is the Communist Party.
Yeah.
They poll second in every election. There are plenty of people in Russia that miss the Soviet Union and want it back. So they vote communist. They're not going to vote for some CIA dip.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Kuzmarov continues, well then, if Biden said it, then it must be true, because Biden never lied before or embellished things for political purposes. Yeah, right. And what about this alleged bromance between Trump and Putin? If it really existed, why did Trump escalate U.S. sanctions on Russia and sell Ukraine Javelin anti-tank missiles the Obama administration refused to sell? Or pull out of a major arms control treaty with Putin, the INF treaty, which Trump felt was bad for America? As far as Putin being a quote-unquote sociopath who wanted to swallow Ukraine, Dowd is obviously unaware that A, the U.S. had induced the Russian intervention in Ukraine by supporting the 2014 Maidan coup and ethnic cleansing operations in eastern Ukraine, to which the Russian government was responsive, and B, the leading scholarly study of political assassination states emphatically that it has not been proven that Putin directly ordered anyone to be killed. And he's got a footnote there to one of their other articles here.
I have an American friend who lives in Russia, and he just went through the list of all the people that the Western press says Putin kills.
Right.
He goes, these murders have all been solved. Some of them, like there was a couple oligarchs who got murdered. I mean, that's mafia stuff.
Right.
You know, if a mafia boss kills another mafia boss in America, do they blame the president? You know,
does
anyone blame the president?
Yeah,
no.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And one was a jealous husband, and one has never been solved, but she was a reporter who was working on, again, exposing the oligarchs and their ripping off of Russian assets. So who really would have done it?
Yeah, yeah. And if Putin was indeed a sociopath, what about Vladimir Zelensky? His administration has admitted to carrying out terrorist acts and killing dissidents, including the daughter of a prominent Russian philosopher, a pro-Russian blogger who was murdered in a cafe, the head of the breakaway Donetsk People's Republic and former deputy of the Luhansk Regional Parliament, and the former leader of the Socialist Party in Ukraine's parliament, Ilya Kiva, who was assassinated mafia style while taking a walk in a park in Moscow where he had been exiled. And of course, we could add to that list his attacks on the Russian Orthodox Church, the killing of Gonzalo Lira, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you have to add to that that they're attacking civilians. Whenever Russia does a military breakthrough, the Kiev regime, aided by the Americans, kills a bunch of civilians, like on New Year's Eve in Belgorod, right? They killed 30 people, including children. It was at a Christmas market.
Yeah.
There was clearly a civilian target, and they're still bombing Donetsk, even though Avdiivka has been, they've rooted out all those Nazis that were bombing Donetsk city from Avdiivka. They're doing it from other places now.
Yeah.
They're just plain evil.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Nazis are like that.
Dowd's biased analysis is echoed by her colleague Nicholas Kristof, a man about whom Edward S. Herman once called a cruise missile leftist. In his piece, What Can We Learn from Navalny?, Kristof compared Navalny to Nelson Mandela, criticized Trump and Tucker Carlson for rolling over before the Russian president, and quoted our own Senator Dick Durbin, who asked why Trump and his congressional enablers want to further appease this Russian tyrant.
I'm so disappointed in Dick Durbin.
Yeah.
He really got put in line once he came out against torture, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, he really got trashed for that, and he's been in line ever since, it looks like.
Yep. Personally, I'm sorry that Navalny died, even if I disagreed with his political outlook. However, the rush to blame Putin for Navalny's death overlooks the fact that no evidence has so far emerged to prove this, and Putin had no motive to do so, because Navalny was not a threat to his re-election, since he had very low poll ratings, and his death could easily be blamed on him, making him look bad.
Yeah, exactly. Cui bono, not Putin.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Now Navalny's wife, Yulia Navalnaya.
No, Yolanda. Joe Biden says that it must be true.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, actual name, Yulia Navalnaya, who gave a blistering anti-Putin speech at the Munich Security Conference on the day of Alexei's death, is going to lead her husband's organization and try to mobilize opposition to Putin, using her husband's status as a martyr.
And the NED money as her backup.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and not just NED, probably a lot of other people too. Anyway, as much as Navalnaya and her supporters want to present Alexei as a victim of political persecution, there is a strong evidence indicating that his arrest was not politically motivated, that he did violate Russian law, and that he was legitimately imprisoned, even if the terms of his sentence may have been unduly harsh. Former Swiss diplomat Jacques Baud reviews the evidence in his 2023 book, The Navalny Case, Conspiracy to Serve Foreign Policy. Baud emphasizes that Navalny was a right-wing businessman given a 5-year suspended prison sentence in the early 2000s because he was buying companies in order to illegally privatize their profits.
Isn't that weird? In America, that's called good business.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But they're a little tougher on it there in Russia.
Yeah.
Navalny was later given a 3-year suspended sentence because of his involvement in an illicit business scheme spearheaded by his brother Oleg, who used his position as manager of a sorting center at a post office to push the French cosmetics company Yves Rocher to use the services of a private logistics company owned by the Navalny family.
And it was the French company that asked the Russian prosecutors to look into it.
That's right, yes. The charges filed against the Navalny brothers were for embezzlement of more than 26 million rubles, which is nearly $850,000. Under the terms of Navalny's sentence, Alexei was prohibited from leaving Russian territory, which was the basis for his most recent arrest and imprisonment. After he was placed under judicial supervision, Navalny had been obligated to report twice a month to Russian prison authorities until the end of his probationary period, which Navalny did not do. In 2020, Navalny violated the latter rule six times, but Russian authorities were then lenient. He was not actually being persecuted. Now, let me stop there. Can you imagine any defendant in the U.S. criminal justice system who receives a sentence of probation and then refuses to report to his probation officer and misses his probation appointment, not once, but six times? You don't think they're heading back to prison? Are you kidding me?
No. Well, he had the backing of the CIA. So that might have been Russia going, Ed, we really want to start a war over this dude.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he was a criminal through and through. And that might be why he did it. He knew that he had the CIA backing him. He figured he could get away with it.
Yeah, yeah. Some political observers even believe that Navalny was being used by the Kremlin to weaken the main opposition parties by splintering their vote. There's a footnote to that. Take that with a grain of salt. But in any event, in November 2012, prosecutors in Russia accused Alekt, an advertising company headed by Navalny, of defrauding the liberal CIA-funded Union of Right Forces by taking $3.2 million for political PR in 2007 and doing nothing with the money.
I think that's awesome. He even ripped off the CIA.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder who killed him then.
Yeah. The charges were initiated by the party itself and not Russian government authorities. So it was a right-wing party responsible for that one. Navalny's checkered past renders his obscene Christoph's comparison of Navalny to Nelson Mandela, who was arrested by South African authorities with support from the CIA because of his belonging to the Marxist wing of the anti-apartheid African National Congress. Navalny, by contrast, was a marginal figure within Russia politically, who in 2007 was expelled from the center-right Yabloko party because of his regular participation in the Russian March, an ultra-nationalist movement, and for his nationalist activities with racist tendencies. Yeah, this is the guy we're talking about here, the so-called hero.
And it's so funny because the United States goes on and on about Nazis and fascists and everybody that wears a red hat is a Nazi, and then they support Nazis, not just in Ukraine, but in Russia.
That's right. In the video supporting the liberalization of handguns, which made him famous, Navalny mimicked shooting Chechen migrants in Russia, whom he compared to cockroaches. In 2013, Navalny supported and fanned the Biryulyovo riots, castigating the hordes of legal and illegal immigrants. Salon magazine reported that if he were American, liberals would hate Navalny much more than they hate Trump or Steve Bannon.
Yep.
Jacobin called Navalny a Russian Trump. This is extremely ironic in light of the fawning depictions of Navalny by Trump-hating columnists whose articles do not actually provide much detail about Navalny and the actual political positions that he took.
I have never heard Trump calling people cockroaches.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one either.
I've never seen him pretend to shoot anyone.
Yeah. One of these positions that endeared him to the West was his support for regionalist and separatist tendencies, which, if successful, would contribute to the destabilization and weakening of Russia. Navalny also advocated for sanctions that harm the Russian people. No wonder, then, that he has been accused of being a foreign agent.
Well, he got the sanctions. Except for, you know who they hurt more? Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Go figure. I mean, look at Europeans, if they're that stupid. Germany, for instance, they cut off the gas from Russia. And then, of course, the U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipeline to make sure they wouldn't turn it back on. But in the meantime, their businesses are going out of business because they don't have cheap energy and gas is going up. The price is going up.
Sure, sure.
And then they go, well, this is Putin's fault. It's Putin's fault that you put sanctions on Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
How? You know, and if anyone falls for that, they're an idiot. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but if you can't remember who did it for a year, then you're an idiot.
Yeah. In 2010, Navalny was a World Fellow at Yale University, whose graduates played prominent roles in the 2014 anti-Russian coup in Ukraine and other U.S.-backed so-called color revolutions. He received more than $5 million in funding from the National Endowment for Democracy, a CIA cutout that specializes in regime change operations.
And now his wife's going to get it.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, right there, the utter irredeemable hypocrisy of Western so-called journalists condemning Putin on the basis of no evidence that he killed Navalny.
Right. Oh, I thought you were talking about election interference.
Well, right. That's where I was going. Yeah. The utter hypocrisy of them complaining about Russian election interference, which is, by the way, getting a renaissance in the aftermath of Navalny's death. Right. I just heard on NPR the other day, their morning news program, they're just repeating the nonsense about the bot farm, the troll farm, right, that supposedly interfered.
13 Russian trolls. It's almost as if the Robert Mueller investigation never happened.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're going to go back to the original propaganda, and we're going to ignore that Robert Mueller spent millions of dollars in 18 months, and all he found was nothing.
Yeah.
He found nothing.
Yeah, they just assert, well, it's a fact that they interfered in our elections in 2016 at least, maybe even before then, is what one of the commentators said. And they're still doing it now. Well, the United States, of course, is the global leader in election interference.
Right.
I mean, literally.
$5 million? I mean, can you imagine if the Russians gave $5 million to, well,
Marianne Williamson. Somebody like that.
Yeah, right?
Or Tulsi Gabbard, whatever. Right.
It just would not be allowed.
Right. And, of course, the press would be all over it.
They'd probably put her in jail.
Yeah. Well, certainly. A Russia Today broadcast leaked surveillance footage from 2012, which appears to show Vladimir Ashurkov, the executive director of Navalny's anti-corruption organization, in quotes, you might put that there, seeking cash and intelligence from an alleged British spy, John William Thomas Ford, and suggesting Navalny's anti-corruption work may benefit firms in London. And they've got pictures of that here, as well as another link.
We wanted you to help us be more corrupt in our anti-corruption league.
Yeah. Kuzmarov says, I previously detailed in Covert Action magazine how the fake poisoning of Navalny 3.5 years ago appeared to have been generated as part of a color revolution psychological warfare operation whose main contours were laid out in a 2019 RAND Corporation report overextending and unbalancing Russia. This report recommended an array of measures, from encouraging domestic protests to providing lethal aid to Ukraine, to undermining Russia's image abroad to weaken and destabilize Russia. High priority was placed on administering sanctions, which Navalny's alleged persecution justified expanding. And of course, they're busy doing it. Biden announced just the other day, I forget how many new sanctions are being imposed, but there's a whole bunch. Today, Navalny's death is being used to further this same operation. The convenient timing for the U.S., which is losing the hot war and also the larger information propaganda war, raises questions as to whether there was some kind of black operation involved that we are likely never to know about.
If they'll pay $5 million to this dude to run against Putin, how much would they pay a prison guard to slip him something?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It couldn't be that difficult to bribe a prison guard.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, wanted to go to this earlier article. If you go to the article we've just been reading, you again, you can find it at Covert Action Magazine, the one on the death of Navalny. It includes a link to this earlier article from 2021, again by Kuzmarov, entitled, Is Russian Opposition Leader Alexei Navalny a Key Prop in a Psychological Warfare Operation Designed to Bring Down Vladimir Putin? Well, I need to get a little tighter with those headlines. But anyway, that is the question. And we're not going to have time to get through this whole thing, but I wanted to move on to a little segment of this article. On December 30th, 2020, the UN Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial and summary or arbitrary executions, Agnes Callamard and Irene Kahn, the UN Special Rapporteur on Promoting and Protecting the Right to Freedom of Opinion and Expression, sent a letter to Russian authorities demanding a probe into Navalny's alleged poisoning, and that was big in the news back then. Callamard and Kahn wrote that if proven, the allegations of Navalny's poisoning by the FSB, that's the Russian Secret Service, constitute a violation of the right to life. The words "if proven" are pivotal because they underscore the following. Sanctions are premature given the allegations that the FSB was behind the poisoning of Navalny have not yet been proven.
And they never were.
Yeah. In their letter, Callamard and Kahn provide a detailed timeline of events of the poisoning. On Tuesday, August 17th, Navalny and some colleagues arrived in Omsk, Siberia, and spent the next 2 days meeting with residents. During that time, Navalny was followed by allegedly FSB agents identified in a Bellingcat report, so take that with huge grains of salt.
Oh, yeah, Bellingcat.
As Alexei Alexandrov, Ivan Osipov, both medical doctors, and Vladimir Panyev, who operated under the FSB's Criminalistics Institute, which allegedly ran a secret poison laboratory.
Whatever happened to the Skirpals?
Skirpals, he talks about that in this article, too.
I mean, they just disappeared, and our vaunted crackerjack intrepid reporters, investigative reporters, never ask.
Right, the Skirpals being a father and daughter, I think,
U.S. and Great Britain, they were poisoned 20 miles from Porton Down, which is like the Fort Getrick of England, right before Russia was going to hold the World Cup in Russia.
Yeah.
Timing is everything, right?
Yeah.
And they made a big deal out of it for months, and then all of a sudden, boom, they just dropped it and they disappeared.
Yeah.
And no one's ever heard from them again.
He does talk about that quite a bit here, but in any event, on the 18th, Navalny had his clothes washed at his hotel's laundry service, and on the 19th, he ate sushi after a long day, went swimming, had a Bloody Mary at the bar, and went to sleep. The next morning, he left at 6 a.m. for the airport, where he had some tea and boarded his return flight to Moscow. On the flight, he became violently ill, feeling beyond pain, and told the flight attendant he thought he had been poisoned. The pilot then ordered an emergency landing back at Omsk, where Navalny was treated at a local hospital. The doctors there did not find evidence of chemical substances in his system or poisons, but attributed his illness to a metabolic disorder, suggesting that he had a grand mal seizure coming from hyperglycemia after going into diabetic shock.
Yeah, I heard he was a diabetic and also had kidney failure.
Navalny was put in a medically induced coma and treated with atropine, which is used to counteract certain nerve agents and pesticide poisoning, but the doctors claim the reasons were unrelated to poisoning.
It's also used to get your heart rate up.
Yeah. At the urging of his family, Navalny was medevaced to Berlin for treatment at the Charité Universitätsmedizin, Medizin, for which the Russian government gave authorization. The medevac was arranged by a Berlin-based NGO with links to the anti-Putin Pussy Riot group.
Oh, jeez.
A group supported by Bill and Hillary Clinton and Ukrainian boxer Vitaly Klitschko, who was installed as mayor of Kiev after the 2014 U.S. and German orchestrated Maidan coup. The CIA and British MI6 at the time briefed government officials with details about the alleged poisoning. At the Berlin hospital, doctors diagnosed Navalny with poisoning with a cholinesterase inhibitor. In early September, they announced that toxicology tests proved that Navalny had been poisoned with a nerve agent from the Novichok group, same thing as used supposedly in the Skirpals, albeit at a very low concentration. The nerve agent had allegedly been found in the exterior of a water bottle taken from Navalny's hotel room in Tomsk, although the concentration was so low that German scientists concluded it was not toxic. They concluded the likely source of the poisoning was through skin contact and clothes. Now, however, the article goes on in a great deal more detail. We don't have time to get into all the weeds here, but basically what he says is that, well, if that were the case, he would have died instantly because Novichok is an extremely potent toxic substance and he wouldn't be getting sick the next day. No, if it was Novichok and it was in the concentration that was lethal on his clothing, it would have killed him. Not only that, this fails to account for all the other people who handled his clothing and the food he ate, etc., who were not protected, and none of them got sick. It goes on from there. Again, you can find both of these articles at covertactionmagazine.com. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.